Guten Morgen. Die großen Themen der Klassik für den Weg zur Arbeit mit Axel Brüggemann.
Good morning. It is Friday, the 30th of January, and I've got a great and special guest with me. We have met in a TV show for Arte when she still was a star of tomorrow. Now she is a star of today, and I'm very much looking forward to talking to Chen Reis. She has recorded an album with Jewish Viennese music. She is recording a new album. We will be talking about that, but of course we will be talking about the current affairs of classical music. I'm very happy that you are there. Good morning, Chen Reis.
Good morning, Axel.
You are in Paris. You are working with Klaus Mäkelä, I think. What are you doing there?
Yes, the Missa Solemnis by Beethoven, one of the greatest pieces ever, which ends with the most important message to all of humans out there, Dona Nobis Pacem.
This is probably something we are looking for in classical music, to have this reinsurance of humanity, isn't it? It's difficult in these times, isn't it?
It's very difficult. I have to say we live in absolutely horrific times. It feels, sometimes to me, it feels like the end of the world. Yeah, as a Jew, of course, I feel it very strongly. I'm still traumatized from the stories I heard from my grandparents. So for me, you know, the Holocaust is not just something you read about in the encyclopedia or on the internet, but these are stories. I mean, I have a document with the names and dates that of my relatives who died in Auschwitz.
Yes.
So it's very real.
Yes, we heard that on Holocaust Day in Germany just a couple of days ago. And the stories are getting less and less, and the people are dying, the ones who have experienced it. So it's up to us to transport these stories.
Yes, and Germany, I have to say, is the safest place for Jews nowadays. I was really, really upset that the UN didn't mention that the 6 million people who died in the Holocaust were actually Jews. They simply excluded us from the Holocaust. And the BBC, the same way. They said the 6 million people who were murdered by the Nazis. So there are quite a few mistakes in that sentence. First of all, because many millions, more millions, were murdered, but the 6 million refers to Jews. The BBC could not say that. And to me, how low have we sunk and how dangerous it is? We are basically, you know, the BBC and the UN are one step from denying that Jews were murdered in the Holocaust.
It is difficult to organize the world and to get a clear view on things right now. Perhaps we go back to a legend, a Jewish legend. Let's just listen to him.
A cigarette
he wanted to have. Leonard Bernstein, who perhaps lived in a world which was more organized, at least looked more organized than ours now. Let's come to another legendary conductor, Zubin Mehta. Chen Reis, you have been working with him a lot. He just announced that he doesn't want to come back to Israel because of Israel's politics against Gaza. What do you think about that? Is it important to position yourself? How is it for Jews to position in between these actions of the government of Israel in Gaza, about the critics, about Jews? I mean, it's all confusing, isn't it?
Yes, it is very confusing. And actually, if you don't mind that I speak about this trend of cancellations, the growing culture of cancellations. First of all, it's important to differentiate. There are two things happening. They are very different, I think. So the first thing is institutions canceling artists because of where they were born, because of their nationality, because they do not distance themselves from a certain regime. This to me, I'm deeply opposed to this kind of trend. I think it's profoundly wrong. Some institutions even went into the length of drafting a statement that the artist has to sign, otherwise they will cancel them. So to me, this is fundamentally undemocratic. Freedom of speech is also the freedom to remain silent. Of course, if you want to express your opinion, by all means, do that. But I did not become a singer in order to share my political opinions. I became a singer to share music. This is my profession. This is my responsibility. This is what I'm...
Dona Nobis Pacem. Yes.
Yeah, this is what I'm hired for. And by the way, this is what I'm contracted to do. Okay, so this is one thing.
Right.
At the same time, I completely understand that there are artists, among them Maestro Mehta, who I admire and adore and forever grateful for what he did for Israel, for the Israel Philharmonic, and for me. I completely understand artists, and like Maestro Mehta, there are many other artists who voice their opinion and they do not wish to perform in certain institutions, but I do believe, and I understand, it did not come to me as a surprise that Maestro Mehta criticized Benjamin Netanyahu. A lot of people criticize Benjamin Netanyahu. I also, I did not vote for him, and I do not stand for the policies that he's pushing regarding to Gaza and regarding to other matters in Israel. We live in very, very difficult, complicated times in Israel, and I think that we have a crisis of leadership in the world.
But shows as well democratic discourse in Israel, isn't it? I mean, you can say, I'm disagreeing, I'm not conducting there until this and this happens. So this shows that there is still a democratic discourse in the country, you know, which is...
Absolutely. The country is a democratic country. By the way, Benjamin Netanyahu was not elected by the majority of the people. He was just the one who managed to form a coalition.
Yeah. But that's democracy, yeah.
But what I want to say, going back to artists canceling, okay, which they can do it, and by all means, I'm not criticizing anyone, but I just want to pose a question, maybe to you, Axel. Who are we actually punishing? The political leaders, they are not affected by whether a classical musician performs or not. We are not high on their list of concerns, right? As much as we want to think that we are important, classical music is a niche, at least in Israel. I mean, but I believe also in other countries in the world that the majority of people don't listen to classical music, unfortunately. So when performances are cancelled because of political reason, it is often the audiences and the musicians in the orchestra who have little power over the institutional policy anyway, who suffer, right? And why not use the stage that is given to us as musicians to promote our values?
I know. And by you posing the question to me, I have to say I'm confused as well, because I was one of the first to investigate in all these things of Theodor Kurenzis, of Russian propaganda in classical music, and I was very much in favor not to go to a concert of, for example, Kurenzis or of Gergiev. And I still see it like that. But on the other hand, if I see what happens in the States or in Israel right now, that these boycotts, I don't know, I see different. Of course, we had Lahav Shani, where it was absurd to cancel him. I have to admit that I'm always rethinking my position on that, because in some cases I really can understand that people say, no, this artist is a part of a machine of propaganda and we don't want to have him here or her. And on the other hand, I think, yeah, you are right. There is an artist who speaks musically and who takes perhaps even position in music, but this is part of what we have to cope with. I left my dogmatism, perhaps, you know. I think you really have to be individual on each question. And yes, if we talk about Zubin Mehta, I can understand it. I mean, he really was doing lots of things for Israeli music. He was really pushing classical music in Israel. And if he is disappointed about the Netanyahu actions, I can understand that he says, this is not the country where I want to perform right now. So it is very individual, isn't it?
Yes, it's very individual. And I agree with you that we need to look at each case individually, because if there are indeed artists that are directly affiliated with a certain regime, mm-hmm. yeah, that they really, you know, take photos with this yes. leader yes. and get money from that state, you know, in that case, by all means, mm-hmm. we have the responsibility to call it out, especially yes. if in your case, I know that you have criticized certain organizations that are supported by the German right. Taxes. This is something else, of course. But it's really, really important for me to say here that the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra is not a state orchestra. Mm-hmm. They receive next to nothing mm-hmm. in terms of money from the state. Absolutely. And it's an orchestra that always stood for peace and dialogue between Jews and Arabs and understanding. And music has always been one of the few spaces where people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different histories can come together. So inclusion, we talk about inclusion so much. To me, yes. inclusion means allowing artists of all origins to stand on the stage and express themselves through music. And not every stage needs to become a political battleground.
Absolutely.
Let me hear that music, please.
Donald Trump, let me hear that music, please. Because there again, yeah. we have the same problem. We had Philip Glass, who was supposed to perform his 15th symphony on Abraham Lincoln in the Lincoln-Trump, in the Kennedy-Trump Center, and he yeah. withdrew it. Again, somebody who said, no, I'm not conform with this politics which is done and which is merging with my music. Is that easier to understand? Is there a different measurement on that?
I completely understand the position of Philip Glass, and yeah, I'm so upset and sorry that that the politicians have taken over mm-hmm. our lives. We cannot allow the politics to dominate every corner of cultural life, because then politics has won, and. I honestly don't know where things are going. As musicians, our role is to offer something different. And this is what the people who come to performances also want to hear. We need also to be very, very careful not to lose audiences over a political bullshit, excuse my language, you know. because, you know, people are so fed up with hearing bad news all the time. At least when they come to the concert hall, they want 2 hours of peace and quiet and be in a different sphere.
Yeah, but the problem is that the concert hall is annexed already, isn't it? If Trump says the Kennedy Center now is the Trump Center, I mean, it is difficult. Yeah. And I know as well, I mean, I'm very close to Franz Welser-Möst, who is having the different yeah. opinion and who says, no, I will go to Cleveland and I will conduct there because it is important, especially now for the people who oppose Donald Trump, that they have my music, that they have my voice, that they see I'm solidaric with them. So it's two different positions. On which side would you put yourself? Go to the States or stay here?
What you said, what Franz Welser-Möst said, I am totally behind that. Mm-hmm. This is my opinion. And absolutely, the people need us because, you know, we bring some sense into mm-hmm. into the equation. They need to see that we don't desert them. And in a way, I really, really hope that Maestro Mehta comes again to Israel because he means so much to the public in Israel and to the orchestra. We love him. We need to see him there. He gave us comfort for so many years. And really, I believe that most of the people that sit in the audience that go to hear classical music share the same values.
Did you speak to him about that?
No, I didn't. I didn't, and I completely respect his decision. It's just a personal and I dare say a national wish of the Israelis that he comes back, because we so much appreciate him. And what Franz Welser-Wurst said about going to America and keep playing there. Yes, I will also go to America and sing there, because we bring the light. We bring the light. This is what I believe.
But I think this perhaps could be the point. You can go to the States and you can bring the light, but probably it is more difficult to go to the Trump Kennedy Center to bring the light there. Perhaps this makes, you know, when we have been discussing about where's the border, perhaps this is the border, yeah. You know. You don't go on the stage of the people you don't want to support, but you go next to their stage to have an opposition opinion and to bring it to the country, you know. Perhaps
this absolutely. Is, yeah. So because absolutely, and because I stand for not to go on stages of institutions that your values do not align with. In fact, I did it as well. Mm-hmm. Earlier this year, in 2025, in October, I was supposed to perform in Ghent, mm-hmm. in the same concert hall that that Lahav Shani was then, and the Munich Philharmonic. Let's say that as well, because yes. US Germans should feel just as offended. They cancelled, and not just because of that one cancellation, but after that, I don't know if people are aware that a few days later there was an open letter in the Belgian press that 14 Flemish institutions signed on, saying that they support the decision of the festival and that they will ban Israeli artists who do not distance themselves from the Netanyahu regime. And I was supposed to perform in one of those places, the Bijolke in Ghent. And although they did not actually write to my management that I will have to make a statement, I chose not to perform there because my values do not, I don't want to be affiliated with an organization which publicly says that they will ban Israeli musicians. So I completely understand Philip Glass, and I understand every American or non-American artist who says, I cannot sing in the Kennedy Center or I cannot perform in the Kennedy Center because their actual credo is something that I oppose to. So what do we do? America is a democracy, right? So we create other spaces,
of course. Yeah,
you know, and there are enough rich people in America who can help us create those spaces where we are free to perform whatever we want.
Hey! Hey, contrabassi, follow me! Oh, corpo d'un dio, shame on you!
Toscanini, shame on you. Yeah, he was really angry, and you can become angry if you look to classical music all over the world. The Metropolitan has to probably fire 22 people. There is no money. They think about selling their Chagall paintings. We just learned today that the opera in Leipzig is close to bankruptcy. Chen, if you read all these news about classical music in decline, classical institutions which don't have any money anymore, are you afraid about the future of classical music?
Yes, I am. At the same, I am, and we need to change things. We need to change. I don't know what, you know, but something has to change. Someone who is, you know, again, I was not trained to do that. I was trained to sing a high C, but there must be someone out there who is trained in economics. And you know, at the end of the day, the numbers have to add up. So whatever has to be done that we are in plus has to be done, okay? Whether it's finding more donors or you know, state money or whatever, somebody has to come up with a solution. But I think that classical music will always exist. I mean, I'm not afraid that classical music will will be gone from the world. It's just that we might need to reinvent ourselves or reinvent the way we reach audiences. You know, in a way, journalism has changed also, actually, definitely, in the past 20 years. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, that's what I always say. You know, we as a classical music magazine, I mean, different to all institutions in Germany, we don't get any subsidies. So we are a private, Backstage Classical is a private thing, you know. I have to finance it, or I have to find people who help us to finance our journalism. Of course, we are forced to do that. And in a way, Chen, you are doing the same. I mean, I have been talking about the CD, Jewish Vienna, you have recorded. You are recording a new CD now. You are an entrepreneur yourself as well. And you show with your person and with your art that you find ways to finance your art and to find people who are interested in your art. Perhaps these examples could help institutions to show them, hey, it could work if you work on it.
Well, I hope so. Of course, it's different when you do it on a personal level or on a or an institutional level. And I will talk to you about my projects. What I do have to say though is that for example in the past just the beginning of 2026, I've sung concerts in Sevilla, mm-hmm. I've sung in London and in Paris, and all of them were sold out. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's going on because the concerts are sold out. When I try to get tickets for the Royal Opera House in London, it's really difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sold out very often. Yes. So there is audience. I mean, try to get tickets in Vienna to the opera. It's very difficult. Yeah. There is audience out there. It's just that and they come and they want. And yesterday in the concert in Paris, there were a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. So I do think that that maybe the problem is in the level of how we organize the money. Maybe mm-hmm. we need to restructure things.
And that we need subsidies, it is clear as well, isn't it? I mean, it's the responsibility of the public, of politics, of society to say, yes, we want culture, you know, and we want to pay for culture as well as society.
I think that, yeah, exactly. And in order to do that, I think that we need to make the music personal mm-hmm. to them, to make them understand that is not a story from faraway times, mm-hmm. okay, but something that is relevant to each one of us. So, for example, the new project I'm working on mm-hmm. with composer and pianist Ori Leshman from mm-hmm. Israel is to record what we call the Israeli songbook, mm-hmm. okay? Some of the most meaningful songs created through collaborations between Israeli poets and Israeli composers. And we are not interested just in the music, but we are interested in the stories behind it. Mm-hmm. And this changes everything. It's like the music, like the songs of Mahler, Schumann, Strauss. The music by itself is very powerful. But once you understand what the composer or the poet went through when they wrote it, it becomes deeply personal. And each one of us realizes that we have been maybe in a similar situation in our lives. And this is how you enroll people. This is how you make them become part of your project to want to finance it.
Yes.
Okay.
We have been talking about that in your album with the Jewish Vienna already. I can link the podcast because there you see what you mean with telling the stories behind the music. How are you doing that now? How does it work with the Jewish songbook? What stories are there behind the music? Which stories did you find, Chen?
Yes. So these songs, I found stories that made me cry. These songs were shaped by collective experiences. Mm. Of the people, of the Jews who lived in Israel, also before the State of Israel was founded. So I'm talking about really from 1900 up to today. What am I talking about? What are these collective experiences? Obviously, the memory of the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. That's a very, very big one, which I released a single of the song Eli Eli, A Walk mm-hmm. to Caesarea, for the International Holocaust Memorial Day.
Right.
on the 27th. We put the link
on the podcast as well, because you can look, watch it at YouTube, I think, as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, on YouTube. This is a story. The poem was written by Hannah Senesch in 1942. She was a brave young woman, originally from Hungary, who immigrated in 1939. She had to flee Hungary to the land of Israel, which was under British mandate at that time. And in 1942, she walks on the beach in Caesarea, and between the sea and the sand, knowing already that her family is burning in Europe and all her friends, she is voicing a prayer that the world will not come to an end. How relevant today. And in 1944, after she decides to go back to Europe, she parachutes behind enemy lines. She's caught, she's tortured, and in 1944, she's executed. Mm-hmm. A few months later, David Zehavi, one of Israel's prominent composers, composes the music to this song, which has become the most, you know, famous song identified with the Holocaust. Why is this story personal to me? Because my grandparents were born in Hungary, like Hannah Senesch, immigrated to Israel in 1939. And my grandfather, when he heard of the horrors of the Holocaust, he decides to join the British Brigade of the Jewish Brigade of the British Army. And he goes back to Europe to save Jews. He is wounded, and he's taken as a prisoner, luckily by the Italians, not by the Germans. And then he's exchanged for another Italian prisoner, and he goes back to Israel. But he lives with his handicapped for the rest of his life. His family died in, was murdered in Auschwitz. We have all the documents on the 6th of June, 1944. So this project, and like this song, there are other songs that are connected to the memory of the Holocaust, or the building of a country from nothing, the waves of immigrations that we have from all over the world, the wars, the loss, the resilience, the hope, everything that is lives inside this music, inside these poems. This project is not about politics. It's about humans. The humans behind the songs. And when people hear them, they often recognize their own memories and their own emotions.
Perhaps that's the circle, Hen, we are doing in this little podcast and in this half an hour, that we are talking about politics, but perhaps politics needs humanity. And perhaps this is what art can give to politics and to society, that we have a feeling for humanity again. And then it merges. Politics without humanity is no politics either, you know. And if you talk about this history and this your own story, and you put it on the pattern of our days and about the chaotic times we are living in, it can tell us very much about humanity, and where we could all agree that all of us are equal, that all of us deserve to be loved. And perhaps music can give that to us. And I see that you're working on that in your albums, in your concepts, and probably you will be working on that tonight in Paris as well, won't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Axel, I agree with every word that you said. And I wish our politicians hear that. And they need to come and hear more concerts, I think.
They all listen to the podcast and they all listen to you. And I thank you very much for your open words. Thank you, Hen Reis.
Thank you very much.
Das war ja der Podcast von Backstage Classical. Für tägliche News aus der Welt der klassischen Musik schaut doch einfach bei uns vorbei auf www.backstageclassical.com. Und wenn ihr Kommentare, Anregungen, Ideen oder auch Beschwerden habt, dann schreibt uns doch einfach unter redaktion@backstageclassical.com. Wir lesen das natürlich sehr genau und werden das auch in unsere Arbeit einbeziehen. Wenn ihr Lust habt und mehr hören wollt, dann abonniert diesen Podcast, denn dann hören wir uns schon bald wieder. Ich freue mich drauf. Macht's gut, haltet die Ohren steif.